Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. Our first ever Issue Is podcast was with Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom towards the beginning of his run for governor. Now we're towards the end of that race. He's got a pretty big lead right now. We talk about a whole lot of things, from immigration to tax reform to health care, and really get him to open up about his family, his kids. And we have some fun, too, find out whether he's rooting for the Dodgers. It was probably our best conversation yet with the Lieutenant Governor. And it comes at a really important time in California politics. Take a listen. Welcome to The Issue Is, and joining us tonight is the frontrunner to be the next governor of California, Democratic Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom. Welcome back to The Issue Is. You were the first guest on our first show. So we're grateful for that, and we're happy to have you back.
It's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're at this inflection point in the campaign. We see your ads about 1,000 times a day, which say, courage for a change.
Yeah.
Now, you've been lieutenant governor for 8 years. The Democrats are in control in Sacramento. Yeah. What's going to change with you that we haven't already seen?
I think more intentionality around the real challenges around affordability, the issue of homelessness and housing in the state of California, a need to address the issue of poverty in all its forms and manifestations, address the wealth and income gap. We'll be much more aggressive on those issues.
What do you mean by intentionality?
It means plan. Right now, there's no housing strategy in the state of California. There are no goals. There's no objectives. There's no timelines. There's no stated goal in terms of housing production. There's no stated goals as it relates to addressing the 134,000 people out in the streets and sidewalks. So it's about organizing a leadership frame from Sacramento to address these vexing issues in a much more intentional way.
So why haven't Democrats done that?
Well, a lot of Democrats are working hard on this. I'm not arguing for the past. I'm not trying to explain it away. I'm trying to make a case for tomorrow. I'm focusing on the future, and I'm focusing on addressing these intractable issues.
But in the meantime, you're in a race right now. It's been a pretty good week in terms of news for you with this race. There was a poll that came out from USC and the LA Times. It shows that you're up, according to that poll you see right there, 54 to 31. The LA Times also endorsed your campaign recently. And here's what they said about you. They said, quote, "This one's easy. One candidate is prepared for the job, and one is almost comically unqualified." They were referring to your opponent, Republican John Cox. Do you think that he's comically unqualified?
I don't want to go there. I'm grateful for that endorsement. I'm not attacking my opponent. I've been talking about issues. I don't know if you saw the first two ads I put out were on the critical issue of infant and toddler care, early childhood education. We're trying to attack issues more than anything else. And I'm not trying to personalize this campaign. I respect John Cox, and I respect his candidacy. I respect the fact that he moved here just a few years ago, and that's not a pejorative. I don't mean that as an indictment. And here he is in a general election for governor of California. So I respect his tenacity and his commitment.
So you're not attacking him in your ads, but you are responding to President Trump in your ads by name. John Cox, when he was here, talked about the fact that you talk a lot about President Trump and make the race a lot about President Trump. And on the issue is, here's what he said about that.
He'd like to have the whole race about the president. And there's a good reason for that, Alex, because he's been part of the problem for 16 years, done nothing about homelessness, the schools that aren't performing, the cost of living, the cost of gasoline, the cost of housing.
How do you respond to that?
I got to unpack that. We were able to get 12,000 people off the streets. So with respect to that frame around homelessness, it's just absurd. Look, let me just make this point. You can't deny the Trump factor. And I don't mean that from a political frame, but from a policy frame. Let me just give you a specific. John Cox supported the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. That would have eliminated $138.8 billion, the Graham-Cassidy bill, from the state of California over a 10-year period. 4 million people would have lost their health insurance. How can we not address that issue in light of Donald Trump and Trumpism? The attack on our clean air and clean water, the fact we're involved in 44 lawsuits. I can go down a list, immigration and the impact the Trump administration's having. So with respect to John, he was endorsed by Trump. He said he supports Trump 110%. I know that's a difficult place for him to be in a general election in California, but it's a legitimate issue, and one cannot deny the assault almost on a daily basis of Donald Trump on California values.
So it seems like you don't have a great relationship with President Trump. I know he doesn't have a great relationship with Governor Brown. It seems like that President Trump responds well to flattery, and he doesn't necessarily respond well to contentiousness. Could it be that the state is going to be harmed if the governor doesn't have a good relationship with the president in terms of infrastructure spending, in terms of federal disaster relief? I mean, could the people of California suffer because of that?
I don't think so at all. Quite the contrary. Donald Trump, it's an applause line attacking California. I mean, the fact that he went after our sanctuary status, threatened to commandeer local police for federal immigration purposes, take away city or state money. He's been assaulting our values on a consistent basis. And we sit there and say, boy, you're a preen, beautiful man. You're extraordinary. I mean, that's nonsense. He's a bully. The fact is, California, we don't need to be intimidated. We're the fifth largest economy in the world. Our population's larger than 163 nations. We punch above our weight. And you don't react by kowtowing, as some cities and counties across the country and states have done. We protect and we preserve our values, and we defend our diverse communities, and we assert ourselves as only California can.
So how do you do that? So, for example, this week he's talking about potentially shutting down the Mexican border, which obviously would impact California in a big way. Say he says something like that. How is governor?
What is that? I don't even know what that means. How do you respond to the absurdity of shutting down the border? He blamed his deficit, which is $779 billion, up 17% from last year. He blamed it partially on the wildfires in California. Here's the facts. 58% of the forests in the state of California are managed by the federal government, by the Trump administration. He's cut the budgets for forest thinning and forest management. It's absurd, the assertions, the attacks, the assault on California. So you got to call that out. You don't just roll over. So you hope and pray that Donald Trump doesn't tweet or attack in some way, shape, or form. So I don't buy this notion of complicity, not with Donald Trump at this moment in our history.
So this show's called The Issue Is. Let's talk about some of the big issues. Of course, one of them you talked about is affordability and housing in this state. One of the issues in your radio debate with John Cox, they brought up the issue of Proposition 13, which some people may not remember. It was probably the most significant proposition in the last 40 years. It locked in a lot of tax rates in this state. And they asked the question, could you repeal Prop 13? You said everything's on the table.
Everything's
on
the table.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because literally this week, they submitted enough signatures, and it's formally now on the 2020 ballot. So it's quite substantively on the table. The voters of California will have the decision to make as it relates to the split roll for industrial and commercial. What I support, and I've been very aggressive and stated that in the debate, is a tax reform conversation. We have not had the conversation we need to have on radically changing our tax system to make it more competitive and address this fundamental fact: volatility. Volatility is our enemy, and we're enjoying volatility now as it relates to capital gains and income tax increases, but that will expose us in the future. What's also exposed us from a competitiveness perspective is the new tax cuts from the Trump administration, the deductibility now being eliminated. So I would prefer a comprehensive review of our tax code, which hasn't been done in decades in this state.
What does tax reform look like for you?
It means bringing everybody around the table. It means putting everything on the table. It means starting not from the perspective of what I think, but collectively of what's possible. And it starts with this fundamental question. What world are we living in? What are the trend lines that define this world, and how can California take advantage of those trend lines as it relates to a tax code that incentivizes better behavior and allows us to be more competitive in that world?
Speaking of taxes, the gas tax is top of mind for a lot of voters. Proposition 6, which would repeal the gas tax, most polls show that that will pass. We have to see what the voters ultimately decide. We know that you are against Proposition 6. You say that we need that money to pay for infrastructure. Yeah. If that does pass, and you're the governor, and you have to deal with it, what happens? What do you do?
Well, we already have the worst roads in the United States of America. We're just going to make them worse. It's a public safety issue. It's code red. I mean, someone joked to me the other day, said we have 564 bridges that are old enough to qualify for Medicare. I mean, the fact is, you can't invest resources to fix something without those resources to invest. You can demagogue the issue, you can lament about it, or you can do something about it, and that's exactly what the legislature and the governor did. And they put up $50+ billion over the next 10 years to improve our roads, our bridges, our tunnels. And they've leveraged in that construct, we're leveraging local dollars, regional and federal private dollars included. So billions of dollars would be stripped away, taken away, middle of projects that are ongoing as we speak, thousands of jobs eliminated, nothing offered as an alternative. So, of course, I reject the cynicism around an initiative was placed on the ballot with one purpose, and that was to turn out the vote for the Republican Party. That kind of cynicism, I think, should be rejected.
Is there somewhere else you can find that money?
No. Period. Full stop. Yeah. I mean, it's just ludicrous. It's illusory. It's a typical rhetoric of folks. We'll find waste and inefficiency. Let me put the magnitude of that $5+ billion in perspective. It's the equivalent of literally taking 67,000 people out of the state penitentiary. It's equivalent of getting rid of 1/2 of all elementary school teachers in the state of California. It's the equivalent of literally eliminating every position at Caltrans, the agency my opponent wants to find efficiencies, almost twice. The payroll at Caltrans is $2.86 billion. Puts it in perspective, the magnitude of what we would be taking away.
Speaking of expensive, a lot of California voters passed high-speed rail years ago. But the project is over budget, it's late, and a lot of voters say, let's cut bait. Enough of that. Can't we spend that money better somewhere else?
Yeah.
What do you
say?
Well,
you can't redirect the money to something else. You have to go back to the voters. And the reality is you can't go back to the voters with the original $9.95 billion because we spent a lot of it. You'd also have to give back $3.5 billion from the federal government, give it back to the Trump administration. And you'd have to take away $950 million. People read the bond. $9 billion for the high-speed rail, $950 was for regional transit projects, including substantive amount of money down here, which you'd have to take away from regional strategies to improve our transportation system. So it's easy to say, it's more difficult to do because the money that's been spent or encumbered. My response to the concern, and by the way, I've been a very vocal critic of previous business plans. I am not an ideologue about this. I support the project, but it has to be more transparent. We have to be more honest about what it is and what it isn't. We can get phase one done, valley to valley, Silicon Valley to the Central Valley. That is not a train to nowhere, as my opponent says, which is, by the way, an indictment of the folks in the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. It's an insult to those folks. It's one of the fastest growing parts of the state. We can get that done, and by demonstrating the technology, we can then invite what's missing, the private sector, into the conversation and to eventually get it through the Tehachapi Mountains, San Gabriel Mountains, down here into Southern California.
So you're saying voters would not be on the hook for the Southern California portion of it?
Well, there's a financing gap as it relates to the Southern California portion that was highlighted in the last analysis, last business plan. This is, look, no one's naive about this. The $9.95 billion, the $3.5 billion from the Fed, and the cap and trade money, of which we're using 25% to set aside to help finance this, still leaves a gap even for phase one. We're going to have to address that. I'm just going to be more stubborn about this, more transparent, more honest about it, and we're going to have to find a way to get the private sector to commit to this in order to get that system down into Southern California.
Let's talk about education. When I talked to you the first time about this campaign, I said, what's most important to you? You said kids 0 to 3. It's also the first thing that you did with your ads for the general election. Most people will agree that the idea of educating little kids is a good thing. The question is, how do you pay for it? Some costs for early childhood education put it at like $50 billion. Where do you get that money, and does that mean more taxes?
We're paying for it. I mean, the number one predictor of whether or not you'll end up in the criminal justice system, or one of the highest predictors of whether or not you'll end up in the criminal justice system, is how many words you speak in kindergarten. The LA Times wrote a wonderful piece on this, front page, basically making this point. We don't have an achievement gap that manifests in college. The achievement gap manifests the first day of school, kindergarten, because we do not invest in infant and toddler care. You have places like Oklahoma that provides comprehensive, quality, early childhood education, preschool. Even Florida does a lot more than most other states. California doesn't invest its money wisely. You want to address the issue of poverty, you want to address these issues around disparity for African American and Latinos, you've got to begin at the beginning. It's not an achievement gap, it's a readiness gap. People aren't left behind in California, they start behind. No greater investment in a question of priorities. When I was mayor in the middle of recession, we fully implemented universal preschool in the middle of a recession because I prioritized it. And I'm basically expressing in a very transparent and honest way, not just to you, but to the millions I put on TV ads around this issue, a real commitment to making this a priority if I'm successful this November.
Okay, I wish I could just talk all day, but unfortunately we have limited time. So we do something called policy issues. This is some other issues that don't get enough attention, and maybe we can
the cards
and see what it
all
is.
All right, what is this? Why not? Marijuana? How's the marijuana experience been going, and what can be done to improve? Well, as you know, I led the effort to legalize cannabis in California. I made this point. I said it's not an act that occurred on election day 2 years ago. It's a process that will unfold over the course of many, many years. And I believe that to this day, even though we've had a year now, almost a year of legalization, there's been a lot of challenges, particularly as it relates to enforcing bad actors, getting people off the streets, and making sure we have a more transparent and accountable system. I believe that we moved in the right direction, an enlightened direction, but let me tell you why, for different reason perhaps than most would agree. This was a social justice issue. This was a racial justice issue. This was an economic justice issue. 1 million human beings will have the chance to get their records expunged. Thousands of people that were in county jail are back home in their communities today because the voters had the courage to move in a different direction. Drug policy reform, I maintain that's one of still the top priorities for me. Criminal justice reform, I want to continue to advance, build on Governor Brown's legacy.
So what's the biggest change that you think now that you've seen it that you would change now?
Well, we're still in the implementation phase, and what's happening is those that are playing by the rules are disadvantaged because they're getting the licensing, they're actually paying the taxes, and we're not enforcing the bad actors. That's the biggest thing that needs to change. Much more aggressive enforcing against the bad actors, and much more support for those that are playing by the rules.
All right, well, up next, we learn more about Gavin Newsom, the man, and play a game of personal issues. Now, last time he was here playing personal issues, he told us that Train was his favorite band. So here's a little Train as we go to break.
Well done.
Pat Moynihan was so excited about that, they tweeted out that they love that you're supporting.
That sent me an email. That was nice.
Yeah. So this week, L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti and I were playing catch at Dodger Stadium live on Good Day L.A. So let's talk a little baseball with the former mayor of San Francisco, Gavin Newsom, back with us, Democratic candidate for governor of California.
So I'm jealous. That looked like a lot of fun.
It was really cool.
So, come on.
All right, we know you're a Giants fan, but, you know, you're running for California governor.
I know.
Are we now rooting for the Dodgers?
It's, these are tough questions. I mean,
it's the issue.
Ask me about homelessness, housing, mental health. Those are easy.
Yeah.
This is a tougher question. I have some friends that actually are on the team. Chase Utley is a great guy, and friends that are in the ownership, so I have to be indulgent, don't I? It's
indulgent.
Tough for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough. I admit it. Look, there's certain principles, and, you know, I could be a equivocator. I can be a politician here. I could say what the audience needs me to say or wants me to say, or I can hold the line.
I'm hearing go Giants, but okay. All right. Let's talk for a moment. You know, I've been covering you for years now, and the number one question I get from people is sort of a basic question. They say, Gavin Newsom is clearly smart and polished and got his stuff together and got the perfect looking family and everything, but they want to know, like, who are you as a person? Who is the genuine Gavin Newsom? Yeah. How do you answer that?
I grew up a single mom that shaped everything about me. She lost her life to breast cancer about 16, almost 17 years ago now. And so I have a very different background than I think most people believe. I started as a small business person, an entrepreneur, but I'm also a social justice guy. That was the contribution of my father. By the way, that's a photo. I love that you have that. That really surprised me. That's my mom and dad. My dad, when he was running for state senate, I was used as a prop, obviously, there. A political prop.
Who would ever do that with their kids?
That's shocking, yeah. but, you know, there's my mom again in Lake Tahoe. They met. She was a lifeguard, and my father was working at a resort. She was 18 years old, so a teenage mom. There's my dad, who I spent a little time with on the weekends periodically in the summers. He's still alive, struggling a little dementia, wheelchair and diapers. But my mom was the rock, and she did everything on her own, came from no wealth, didn't complain, didn't explain. And I'm here because of both of them for substantive reasons, obvious reasons, but also my mom, grit, hard work, determination. My dad, a sense of idealism. He was a Sarge Shriver, Bobby Kennedy Democrat, a social justice warrior. And that's really who I am. I'm a combination of both of them.
Yeah, the Cox campaign likes to put out this idea that you're a fortunate son and you had all this connections with your father that helped sort of spur your campaign. What do you say to that?
No, I think that's wildly overstated. I started a small business by myself, pen to paper, wasn't anyone else's, with one part-time employee, got 13 investors. It's grown. We have 22 small businesses, 800 employees, but no one handed that to me. It was through hard work, grit, a lot of luck, and a lot of support. I've been very blessed to have a lot of relationships that have enlivened me and allowed me to learn an enormous amount and be mentored. But I think that's a lazy punditry to somehow suggest suggest I was born at 25 years old, and there was nothing that preceded that, and there was no work associated with the last 25 years of my life.
I know you say that the most important thing that ever happened to you is the birth of your kids.
Yeah.
And it changed your worldview.
Yeah.
How does it change your worldview? How do you see governing different because of that experience?
You see things in sustainable terms, not situational terms. What I mean by that is short-termism means nothing. You shape an empathy, a deep love, a deeper love than you can ever intellectualize until you have kids. And you also express that, I think, broadly when you think about issues. I'm very different when I think about issues of early childhood education now that I have kids. I have a very different point of view about education broadly now that I'm negotiating with principals and teachers about my own child's future.
Are there things you would have done differently as San Francisco mayor if you had kids?
Yeah, oh yeah, I would have started earlier. Look, we did universal preschool. That came too late. I'm really proud of it. I didn't understand the brain science. 85% of the brain's formed by the time you're three. I didn't understand the power and potency of prenatal care, been the last thing I understood. Or, the notion of singing and talking and reading to your kids, counting your kids, those first three precious years, early Head Start. I didn't even think about early Head Start. I thought about Head Start. So in that respect, yeah, I would have oriented a lot more focus there.
Okay, we have something on this show called Personal Issues, which you were the guinea pig for, and I know you love it. It's 30-second rapid fire of some of your favorites to get to know you a little bit better.
All right.
Okay, so here we go. Ready? The last book you read.
I can't make this up. My Life, Bill Clinton's 957-page tome.
It's very long.
I hadn't read it.
I've read it too. Favorite type of wine? Because I know you're a winery.
Well, I mean, I'm a Cabernet guy.
Okay.
I won't do the Trump thing and sell my brand here.
Plump Jack Winery. All right. Favorite type of music?
I'm a pop rock guy.
Favorite meal?
Oh boy, pasta.
And this is an easy one. Best thing about being a Californian?
Are you kidding? Diverse population. Remarkable diversity.
See, you got through it. All right, we got one more game for him. It's called the name game, and that's coming up. We're going to get his thoughts on some of the various leaders in the state of California. We're interested to hear what he says when we come back.
Name game.
All right, welcome back to The Issue Is. So this is called the name game. We get one word to describe some prominent figures in California, around the country. When John Cox, your opponent, we asked him about you, he said that you were superficial. So let's begin with John Cox.
So is that how we're starting? Wow, did he? Decent.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's somebody who's ahead in the polls. Governor Jerry Brown.
One of a kind, is that a word?
Okay, sure. Former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger.
American success story. That's not a word, it's a phrase. Forgive me.
Senator Dianne Feinstein.
Oh, tough as nails.
Senator Kamala Harris.
Inspiration.
President Donald Trump.
An embarrassment.
Jennifer Siegel Newsom.
Rock star.
That is his wife. How has she changed your life?
Her example, her mentorship, she's cause-oriented all around women and girls, the issue of gender equality. If we're successful, and I say we're successful, this state will never have had someone, I think, and I've been inspired by other first ladies. She is a whole nother level. She is a remarkable human being, decent, honorable, empathetic, caring, compassionate, purpose-driven person.
When we come back, some final thoughts about the future of the Republican and Democratic parties right here in California. But first, a reminder that you can stream this show as a podcast. Search for The Issue Is wherever you search for podcasts. And you can see a lot of our past conversations with the Lieutenant Governor as well if you want to hear more from him. I know you love this song, right?
Of course I love this song. Just no Kanye right now. No Kanye.
This is just Tupac.
This is good. We're doing Tupac.
Yeah.
Don't cook Kanye. California.
Election Day here in California and around the country is November 6th, but the deadline to register to vote is October 22nd. It is so important to have your say. Get out there and register. Joining us now, the Lieutenant Governor of California and the candidate to be the next governor of California, Gavin Newsom. So let's talk about where things are at in terms of California politics. The Republican Party right now is almost in third-party status. There are more people that are declined to state than are Republicans.
Yeah.
Is that good for the state?
I don't think it's healthy. And look, you can mark that moment. Someone said to me the other day, I thought it was an interesting way of describing it. He says, America today is like California in the 1980s and 90s. And you could really mark the beginning of the end of the Republican Party into the 1990s. Pete Wilson, Prop 187, the xenophobia, the fear, the nativism that was alive and well, three strikes. And the Republican Party at the time was in its ascendancy. And now you're right. Technically, they are third party status. I don't think that's particularly healthy. I would argue, though, Donald Trump is walking the Republican Party off the same cliff. And the Republican Party nationally is in peril. In 5, 10, 15, 20 years, also being third-party status. I don't say that from a hyperbolic frame. I really substantively believe that.
Although some people thought that before Trump's election, and then he got elected.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the future of the Democratic Party, because one thing that Governor Brown has often done, because there's not that much of Republican opposition in terms of numbers in the legislature, is he's vetoed a lot of Democratic bills.
Yeah.
And he's sort of been a backstop to what some would call Democratic overreach. Is there anything that you think the Democratic Party is doing right now that's too far to the left, that's too much?
No, I mean, of course. Look, we'll get into the weeds, and I can sort of analyze his vetoes. I pay a lot of attention to this. Look, I was not dissimilar as mayor of San Francisco, mayor of a county, not just a city, that was perceived, quote-unquote, as the dolt in the room. You didn't have to always agree with me, but I was the backstop, and I did veto bills, and we balanced budgets. We were stubborn. We invested in a rainy day reserve. I'm not profligate. I'm passionate in terms of my progressive principles and values, but I have no interest in reverting back to the old days of tax and spend and deficits. And so in the spirit of Governor Brown, I want to maintain that fiscal discipline, but with some emphasis on investments in early childhood education and the conveyor belt for all talent, our institutions of higher learning.
From a style perspective, he's been pretty low-key. We don't see him a lot on TV. He doesn't do a ton of interviews. How would your style differ?
I'm not constitutionally capable of that, so you'll see a lot more of me, which is probably not good politics. I mean, look, Jerry Brown's a political mastermind. I don't think it's a gross exaggeration. I don't think it's exaggeration at all. He's playing three-dimensional chess. We're playing checkers. He has instincts that he has built up over the course of a 40-plus year career. He's a master at his craft. And so I don't dismiss or diminish his style, but it's a very different style than mine. I tend to lean into things. I tend to try to set the agenda. I try to bring people along. And so I think you'll see a style that is significantly different. It doesn't make it better, but it will certainly be a little bit more forward-leaning on some of these issues.
Jerry Brown ran for president 4 times. Any interest?
Three times. Are you suggesting he's considering the fourth?
You know, a lot of people now are thinking about running for president, and there is conversation when they put out those names that your name is often included in that. Is there any truth to
that? There are 4 Californians that are leading candidates, including Michael Avenatti, not just Tom Steyer and your mayor here, Garcetti, and obviously my old friend Kamala Harris. That is not in the future. It's not in the tea leaves. It's not even part of my consideration. It shouldn't even be part of the conversation.
So what is part of the conversation imminently is potentially being the next governor of California. Yeah. Day one, you get in that job. What's priority one? What's the first thing you do on day one?
Well, the budget. I mean, the budget, in fact, budget's being put together as we speak. You only have a few weeks during a transition to put your imprint on that budget. The budget's the ultimate reflection of our values. And to the extent that we can influence that, that's the most significant shift in terms of a policy orientation and direction. It's not just the how business as it relates to the application of our ideals and these 30-plus policy plans that we're advancing, but it's the who business. It's getting the right people to implement these strategies, and I'll give you a perfect proof point of that, the Department of Motor Vehicles. No one is suggesting that any of us are satisfied with the quality of operation there. That substantively has to be a top agenda item.
And last question, you feeling good about the state of the race right now?
Yeah, I mean, at this moment, but this is, you know, the last few weeks of races, you sleep with one eye open. You take nothing for granted, putting my head down, not just running my campaign, but also supporting down ballot campaigns. I would feel very, very diminished if we win this race, but we don't take back the House of Representatives and provide some check on Trump and Trumpism.
Well, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be
back. We hope if you do win that you'll come back and visit us again.
Count on it. It's now on tape.
All right. Thank you very much for being here. We want to let you know as well that we had John Cox, his Republican opponent, here on the show a few weeks ago. You can watch that on my YouTube page, youtube.com/AlexMichelson. Also in our Issue Is podcast as well to hear his perspective. And thank you so much for joining. And most importantly, get out there and vote. And as we end, we have more train.
Well done.
Little soul sister.
I like it.
Thank you very much, Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to our conversation with Lieutenant Governor Newsom. And a reminder once again to get out there and vote. I hope you'll consider also listening to our conversation with Republican John Cox and subscribing to this podcast. Leave us a nice review. That would be awesome. I'm Alex Michelson. Catch me in social media, and we'll see you on Good Day LA and next time here on The Issue Is.